be perfectly honest, I kind of wanted to just have a Cubs podcast this week, and we could have just done live play-by-play of our reactions to Game 4 Cubs-Cardinals, but I guess if you're subscribed to this, if you're downloading this, you do want to hear about the Bears, so we'll bring that to you on Episode 7 of the ChicagoFootball.com Bears podcast. I'm Kevin Fishbane, joined as always by Arthur Arkish. Got executive producer Dan Mott and associate producer John Solly on hand. We have another Bears victory to talk about. Bears over the Chiefs 18-17, and a result that everyone saw coming as that game went along. We'll talk about that. We'll move on to the 0-5 Detroit Lions. Talk to Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News to break down that matchup. Arthur and I will go in-depth in analyzing the bad, woeful Lions. And then we have an interview with Ego Ferguson, and we will make our picks as always. Be sure to subscribe to the Chicago Football Podcast on iTunes. Follow all of us on Twitter at ShyFootball, at Bears_Insider. I am at K Fishbane. He is at Arthur Arkish. And Arthur, at what point on Sunday did you think the Bears actually had a chance to win?
Wow. I guess after they pull off the first remarkable drive with 3-something left, and I guess as soon as Tracy Porter's pass breakup, which I'm guessing we'll talk about a little bit more, but they've just gotten the touchdown to Marquise Wilson, the first of two just tremendous throws from Jay Cutler, and then Porter comes up with the big play. Alex Smith made a bad throw, but that's neither here nor there. And then you started to kind of feel it, and I think it kind of goes in line with the way the Bears players are feeling. There's confidence building. We're watching young players grow up in front of our very eyes, and I'll defer to you. You were the one inside Arrowhead, but was that about the time when you felt something special might be brewing?
Yeah, I would say so. You know, once Jamal Charles got hurt and Pernell McPhee blocked the field goal, things just kind of changed. And even though the Bears only responded with a field goal of their own after that, we're still down by 11, you just kind of had a weird feeling that they were going to find a way. And when Cutler made that throw to Marquise Wilson, which still is like one of the best throws I think I've ever seen, certainly in person. And it's kind of the epitome of Cutler, too, because it's a throw that only a handful of quarterbacks can make, period. It's also a throw that he did it off his back foot, and if that got intercepted, you know everyone would be complaining about it. So once that happened, I think I was kind of like, oh, wow, something could be brewing here. And Arthur, I guess the cynical side of me sometimes downplays confidence and a team's emotions going into a game, but hearing from Kyle Long and Tracy Porter on Monday, hearing from the players after the game, and then experiencing what we experienced last year in that miserable locker room and a miserable season, I think there actually is something to be said that these guys feel really good about what's going on. Tracy Porter even traced it back to the game against Seattle. Like they saw something there that they could really build on, and they're in a good spot right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I think it's a testament not only to the, you know, up and down the roster, but obviously to a coaching staff that is able to reach a lot of young players, a lot of inexperienced players. I think there's plenty of praise to go around. But look, after everything that we saw, that Bears fans saw last year in the final Trestman debacle, if you will, I think it's okay to embrace this, enjoy it, and let's also kind of take it for what it is and keep things in perspective. They got handled pretty well by the three really, really good teams, and they were able to take advantage of, I think, a few breaks that maybe went their way against some teams that are more aligned with their talent level. So we'll see where it goes from here. But they should never apologize for getting those breaks or for beating whoever's in front of them on the schedule.
No, good teams beat teams they're supposed to beat. The Bears were not supposed to beat the Chiefs, and they came out with a victory. Now, this week, and we'll get to the Lions in the second half of the show, I mean, this is a Lions team they're supposed to beat. So we'll see how that translates on the field. Two kind of injury items I want to talk to you about before we get to our three and out. Shea McClellan goes down with a knee injury. It didn't look good, goes off on a cart. Obviously, no update from John Fox on Monday. We'll learn more this week about his availability. I'm guessing he's out for the Lions game. Say what you will about Shea McClellan, and I think everybody has a lot to say about Shea McClellan. This staff likes him, and they like him calling the plays. They like him in that inside linebacker spot. He did not miss a snap until he got hurt. And Leroy Reynolds made a nice play getting a tackle for loss, but I think there's a big drop-off there, at least certainly in knowledge of this system. What is kind of your take on a Bears team without McClellan, which I should mention, I know there's a lot of people listening to this that would say they might even be better with McClellan, but let's be real. I mean, there is a reason that he's out there and not leaving the field.
Yeah, a few things there, and I think the most important and what you said at the top is how this staff really likes Shay McClellan, and I think we have to remind people that this staff has no reason to say that unless they really do. For years, we were kind of force-fed McClellan because Phil Emery was trying to save face on the pick. That's not the case here. This is Vic Fangio, one of the best linebacker instructors, if you will, in the game, and if he sees something in Shay McClellan, he's a heck of a lot smarter than I am. Now, with regard to the injury, of course it hurts. I mean, Leroy Reynolds was on the street for a reason, and Shay McClellan was a first-round pick for a reason. So it's tough because I thought he actually looked good in that game. He had been right in where he needed to be on the Jamal Charles snuffing out a screen, and he has had people lined up, even if there hasn't been the type of impact plays. And unfortunately, I think this is kind of the culmination of injuries piling up in the middle of the Bears' defense on both sides of the football. Antrell Roll, Shay McClellan, back-to-back weeks, obviously Will Montgomery at the center position on offense.
Yeah, and I think, you know, McClellan did, he came in fast on Jamal Charles, I think, one of the Chiefs' first drives, and was kind of right there to pop Charles on a bad throw, but I don't know if it would have been complete because he was right there. But here's something about McClellan, and you and I have kind of tried to get more on this from Vic Fangio. He had one tackle for loss this season, zero passes defense, zero interceptions, zero forced fumbles, zero sacks, zero fumble recoveries. Christian Jones, same stat line, though Jones made a really nice play on a throw to Travis Kelce. Leroy Reynolds comes in, gets a tackle for loss in, you know, one of his first plays. I think the Bears need someone to make some plays from the inside as well. And, you know, maybe McClellan was going to get there. But in terms of playmaking and impact plays, based on what we've seen in 4.5 games, he was not giving them that.
Yeah, no doubt. And we're not going to sit here and apologize for McClellan, although I do think it's worth noting that you have to be in position to make the plays before you can close on him. And at least he's been in position more often than not. And that said, was it a coincidence that Christian Jones comes up with his first splash play shortly after McClellan goes down and Leroy Reynolds is on the field with that huge wallop, I believe, on third down, the biggest hit really any Bears defender has made on this young season? I don't know. That's for everyone else to decide. But there's no doubt after watching the way Vic Fangio's defenses in San Francisco operated that he does need the impactful guys on the inside of that D.
And briefly, Jaquizz Rodgers on IR with broken arm, elbow. This is a loss that I think fans are not going to realize. There, again, like we talked about McClellan, I think you have to trust this coaching staff. They had Rodgers as the number two back for a reason. He was very important on special teams on punt return and kickoff return teams. Yes, could this mean more snaps for Jeremy Langford? Kind of excited what they can do there. Sure, but this is a special teams loss, is maybe more so than a loss in the offense.
Yeah, no doubt. I'm glad that's the way you kind of frame it, because that's exactly my thoughts. And we do have to mention that now three really quality special teamers, when you count Sonoris Perry and Cornelius Washington, have went down, are on IR for the season. So that's tough to recover from. Jeff Rogers' units have come under scrutiny fairly so. So this is kind of one more hurdle that he'll have to clear. And losing Rogers is a big loss. But at the same time, there is some excitement, I think, with regard to Jeremy Langford perhaps getting more involved now.
I don't think there's a question that I or Hub has received on Twitter more than, why hasn't Jeremy Langford gotten more snaps? And I get where people are coming from, but you can't take Matt Forte off the field. I did like Langford being split out wide for a play last week, got a 14-yard catch. More on that in the All-22 slideshow at chicagofootball.com. That's a tease. But if they use him more in that realm, I'd be kind of curious to see how that works out. Let's break down a little bit more of this win over the Chiefs in our weekly 3 and out.
1, 2, 3. I'm going to give you to the count of three.
Then shalt thou count to three.
I'm going to count to three.
1, 2, 5.
Lisa, three.
3 and 8. All right, one positive, one negative, one moment that mattered from Sunday. Arthur, you're positive.
Yeah, I'm going with outside linebacker Sam Acho. I believe that his health has aligned with the defensive strides that this team has made. I thought he was the best defender on the field Sunday, and I think that his experience in a 3-4 is now what's allowing both Lamar Houston and Willie Young to really focus on just pinning their ears back and getting after the pass rusher. So I think as Acho develops, or as Acho continues to get comfortable in this defense, it's kind of exposing some of the other mismatch pieces even more elsewhere.
Yeah, I'm going with the reserves, whether it was Hronos Grassou, who got better as the game went along. I thought Charles Leno had a nice game aside from one missed block on a run play. Cameron Meredith, two big catches. Josh Bellamy, a couple first downs. Leroy Reynolds, we talked about earlier. Harold Jones-Korte, you did not notice him. It's a good thing when you're safety. I think all these guys did a nice job in patch-up work to kind of help the Bears get their win. A bunch of no names kind of on the field. Some guys we didn't even know who they were until a few weeks ago. Now they're playing significant roles. Do you have a negative from Sunday?
Yeah, sure do. And I think I just misspoke. Obviously, I didn't mean that Sam Acho's improvement is exposing other areas. I meant that it's masking them, guys that aren't quite as comfortable as he is in a 3-4 defense. I apologize for the confusion. For a negative, I had injuries jotted down here, but I think we covered that pretty well at the top. So I'm going to go with the Bears' tight ends. And I don't think that it's time to panic or anything like that, but I do think Martellus Bennett has had a couple off games in the last three. Had a big drop that could have been really costly on the final drive and didn't really do much as a block. And Zach Miller had the early penalty. He had a chance to make a play on the football in the end zone and wasn't able to. So, again, I don't think it's time to get alarmed or anything, but this is the time where you'd love to see your tight end step up, given the receiver injuries elsewhere. I don't believe we saw that last week.
Yeah, I'll go. I was going to go penalties, but they did shore that up in the second half. They had five penalties, though, in the first half, and they still got to get these offensive line penalties sorted out. The run game was not very good. I think Matt Forte ended up with decent numbers in the end, and they're going to keep running the ball no matter what. And he had a few nice runs. I really liked when they got him outside and got Hronos Grassou and Kyle Long moving outside the pocket to kind of help lead him. It was a 10-yard run, I believe. But there's not many games they can afford to. This is three games in a row now they have not reached 100 yards rushing. So we'll see if they can do that against Detroit. But that was something that might have made things easier if they're able to run the ball a little better. What was your one moment that mattered?
Well, I know we're not talking about fantasy football, so I won't tell you the Jamaal Charles injury, although that was obviously pretty impactful in the Bears game as well. There's so many moments you can look at in the second half, and yet I'm going to look at one in the first half. It was 3rd and 18. The Bears offense had done absolutely nothing except for a strip sack that turned into a touchdown for the Chiefs. And I thought that Matt Forte managing to pick up 19 yards on 3rd and 18 and pick up a big block from Matt Slauson, allowing the Bears to put points on the board. It was just a field goal. But if you're going to talk about the importance of the Pernell McPhee field goal block, I think you have to talk about the importance of finding a way to put three on the board before intermission just as much. So I thought that was the biggest play of the half and was really turned out to be big in the outcome.
Oh, no, that was a huge drive. And you're right, they needed to get those points. And kind of a similar situation, they only led to a field goal, but Marquise Wilson had a 33-yard comeback catch in which there was pass interference called on the defense. He still made the catch. And that kind of showed you that they could get the ball downfield. And I think it showed you a trust between Cutler and Wilson, who then eventually hooked up for the touchdown. It was Wilson who drew another pass interference penalty that led to the game-winning touchdown. But that one throw was at the left sideline in the third quarter. They eventually got a field goal out of it. I think it kind of helped turn the tide for the offense for their back-to-back touchdown drives. They could move the ball downfield a little bit. That was our weekly 3 and out. Of course, you can read my 3 and out after every game on our website. Arthur does a great job in 4th and goal, his little stock report, 4 up, 4 down from the previous game. That's all at chicagofootball.com. Okay, Arthur. Oh, by the way, we haven't talked about this on the air. I did beat you in fantasy this week. And I think we are doing a disservice to our listeners if we're not anything but honest with them. And you do host our fantasy podcast with John Solly. I do consider you the fantasy expert, and I just need to be pointed out, you do lead the league in points, but I beat you.
Yeah, it was a tough week. We just finished the fantasy podcast, and I was saying I had Jamaal Charles in two leagues. I was combined 7-1 in those leagues, so I don't know how I'm going to do damage control here, but it's not pretty. And I'll also add, anyone that watches our Chicago Football Now TV show, Kevin Fishbane is our ringer. On a weekly basis, he's dropping knowledge on who to pick up for either daily or waiver claims, and meanwhile, I've just been stinking up the joint. I'm ready to be demoted.
Kevin, should we have you on the fantasy podcast now? Should we?
No. It's a terrible idea. It's terrible. I'm not good at fantasy football. Arthur knows that. I've just gotten kind of lucky last few weeks. But as I said, I think it's really important for us to be honest with our listeners, and they need to know that I beat you.
Yeah, I told you, I'm taking my lumps. So, you know, it's all about what does John Fox say? There's a two-part, I'm going to screw it up, but it's about how you respond to a reaction. Can you help me here? You know what his little catchphrase is. Maybe you don't. I'll look it up. Give me a minute. Let's get back to the next section.
No idea what you're talking about. I also stopped listening at one point, but that's okay. I know he likes chopping wood. That's been his metaphor of the week.
Give me a minute. I'm going to find it. I'm searching Gmail.
Fine.
Right,
I'll talk about the Lions then, even though you are the NFC North correspondent for USA Today Sports. The Lions are really bad. They're 0-5, and Matt Stafford got benched in the third quarter. They have the worst running game in the league. I'm going to go ahead and call it one of the worst running teams through 5 weeks in NFL history. They haven't rushed for more than 69 yards in a game. The defense couldn't stop Arizona. Jim Caldwell just looks confused. I think he's looking for spaceships when he's just staring at the sky. I don't even know where to begin how bad this Lions team is.
Well, I think what's especially scary is that the whole offseason was dedicated to that run game. From the first round pick for Laken Tomlinson, your boy, to the trade for Manny Ramirez with Denver, obviously to the drafting of Amir Abdullah. Everything was set up to take more off of Matthew Stafford's plate and become a power running team. And it has just been, as you said, it's been embarrassing. It really has. And I'm looking forward to getting Josh on the show to kind of get into the more nuts and bolts of it, of what's really going on here. But it's been tough to watch. You know, Marty Mayhew talks about how his team's going to be built from the inside out. And this is how he comes out on the offensive side of the ball. And I know some of the injuries aren't his fault, but what's going on defense in replacing Sue and Fairley has been, you know, pretty much just as bad. So I don't know that there's any light at the end of the tunnel for the Lions. I guess light at the end of the tunnel is if they avoid 0-16. I'm sure they will, but it is really, really bad right now.
Well, you do know a lot about the Lions, and I lean on you, Arthur, for my NFC North and fantasy knowledge. But I am going to we are going to talk to Josh Katzenstein because he knows a little bit more about the Detroit Lions.
We have enemy Lions.
All right, joining us this week to talk Bears Lions is Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News. You can follow him on Twitter at @JKatzenstein. He has the awesome job of covering the 0-5 Lions. Josh, everyone, I assume, is panicking. Here's what my first question, though. Can you tell me one good thing about the Lions through five games? Is there anything they're doing right?
Ezekiel Ansah is playing really well. I mean, he's already up to 5 sacks this season. Seems to be on pace for, you know, well, he is on pace for double-digit sacks, 16 sacks, in fact, which would double his career high so far. And I mean, in year three, obviously, that's when you expect a guy to take a jump like he has so far. But really, you know, beyond him, it's been pretty bleak for this team. Theo Riddick's looked good at times. Their safeties, you know, have been pretty good for the most part. But I mean, offense, defense, special teams, there's really not much that has been consistently good for the Lions so far.
Josh, what? I know that the focus this offseason was on building a running game and building a competent offensive line. Where has this thing backfired?
I think mostly it's just that they forgot that continuity is one of the most important things with the offensive line. I mean, it made sense the way they were building it because they took Larry Warford in the third round a couple years ago. They took Travis Swanson in the third round last year. They take Laken Tomlinson in the first round this year. So, I mean, there you have your interior line for the future. But the problem is that Warford's been hurt, which has been a big loss. Manny Ramirez actually played better than Tomlinson in the summer. And then their tackles just have been playing really poorly. Riley Reiff has actually played pretty well the last two games. But, I mean, in the first three games, neither of the tackles were playing well, whether it was Reiff and Cornelius Lucas. Now Adrian Waddle's been struggling since he's come back the past few games. In week five, they had a rotation at right tackle. So really, I mean, there's just a lack of consistency. You know, it and even when the line does play well, there will be something else that happens, whether it's, you know, a tight end missing a block, a running back missing a gap, or, you know, Stafford not throwing to an open receiver. I mean, there's just so much that's been going wrong, and I mean, the guys just really need to start to play better and find that chemistry.
So, Josh, I'm working on our kind of game preview, and Arthur and I are going to break this down a little bit later in the show, you know, talking about unit versus unit here. I'm looking at the Lions' passing offense, and obviously Stafford was awful on Sunday and has not been good this season, and I'm guessing Calvin Johnson just isn't at 100%, or at least at the Calvin Johnson level we're used to. But you just look on paper, you see Calvin, you see Golden Tate, you see Eric Ebron, and you think to yourself, like, well, at some point they'll put it together and they'll make it click. And while the Bears' pass defense has been better, they're still a little bit liable to get beat deep in that secondary. I mean, is there a switch that just needs to turn on? Is there something that tells you this passing game can be what it's capable of being?
Well, I think the only thing that could give you confidence at this point is the names on the paper. I don't know if Ebron's going to play this week. And obviously he was really good, you know, for the first few games of the season before he suffered a knee injury against the Seahawks. But I mean, even without him, I mean, Theo Riddick has been a beast in the passing game so far, a really reliable guy. I think the problem is that the Lions are throwing so many short passes, so many screens especially, that it's become so predictable for teams that they're not really scared to be beat over the top. So I think it really just has to be a total mentality change by the coaching staff and one that they instill into the players, particularly Stafford, to just let it loose, go after it downfield, because right now it doesn't look like Calvin Johnson is the receiver that we've known for the past several years, but we also haven't seen him get that many opportunities to make plays downfield. So until he gets that, I mean, I'm not ready to write him off. And obviously when Golden Tate is giving 100% effort, which he wasn't against the Cardinals, I mean, he's been pretty good too, but, you know, the deep looks haven't been there to him either.
So, Josh, how much, and this isn't really related to this week, but big picture, and I think this is only a natural discussion to have after a start like this, Jim Caldwell, obviously just a year removed from the breakthrough. Is he in trouble? Is Marty Mayhew in trouble? I'd imagine Joe Lombardi has to be in trouble. How high does this go up, and who should really be looking over their shoulders?
Well, I mean, I think it has to go up, you know, all the way to the top, looking at, you know, mm-hmm. both general manager Martin Mayhew and then the president, Tom Lawan. And obviously he deals with a lot of the non-football stuff, but I mean, when you are as bad as this team has been to start the year, and when you have some of the salary cap issues that they've had the past few years, I mean, I think you really have to evaluate, you know, who is making the decisions on this team, and particularly with the draft. I mean, I wrote in a column on Monday, it was focused on Matthew Stafford, but I pointed out that Martin Mayhew's best, most valuable late round pick during his 7 years as GM was a punter. And Sam Martin's a really nice guy and a pretty good punter. But, I mean, you need to find, you know, gems late in the draft if you want to be successful, and he just hasn't done that. I think that Caldwell is pretty safe right now. But, I mean, I think anytime you go 4-12 or 5-11, I mean, there are going to be changes made, so it's really hard to predict. And, obviously, if they were to fire the GM, then the new GM might want his own coach. And I don't think, you know, anything's going to happen in the next couple weeks. Maybe if they somehow fall to 0-8, you know, after the Lund game, which there will be a bye, there might be some changes. But I think pretty much anything that's going to happen won't happen until the end of the year.
Joined right now in our Behind Enemy Lines segment by Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News, talking Bears Lions. Josh, defensive side of the ball, Cardinals gashed the Lions last week on the ground. I mean, the simple way to look at the Lions run defense is say, well, Fairley's gone, Sue's gone, and DeAndre Levy hasn't been healthy. Is there more to it? And because the other thing too, obviously the Lions knew they weren't going to have Fairley and Sue, so you would think that they'd have enough time to figure out a way to make do without them. But what's going on with this run defense?
Well, yeah, I mean, you pointed out, obviously, the defensive tackles being gone, it has been a major problem, and we touched on the continuity with the offensive line. I mean, it's a lot similar with the defensive line. I mean, anytime you have to adjust to so many new players, and obviously, you know, the biggest names were Sue and Fairley. C.J. Mosley's gone, too. Andre Flewellen was gone. He's back now, but George Johnson was gone, too. And, I mean, that's a lot of production up front. That's a lot of guys that proved they could perform in the run game. And I think, you know, obviously playing against a guy like Adrian Peterson made it hard. And they've had a couple good games where they played well on run defense. But I think the linebackers just aren't where they were last year. DeAndre Levy's absence has hurt them in countless ways, you know, both in the run and pass game. Steven Tulloch isn't the same player he was before his knee injury. And I just think that, you know, defensively, Ndamukong Suh set up so much of what they did last year and the years previous that I think a lot of guys just really look lost right now without him.
And with regard to Ndamukong Suh, is there any silver lining, at least for Lions fans? I mean, think about how much worse maybe all this would be if the Dolphins were 4-1 and Ndamukong Suh was keying everything there. Does that provide any solace because he hasn't exactly gotten off to a smashing start down in South Beach?
Yeah, I think it does. It's funny. During my chat this afternoon, you know, someone said that Suh clearly wouldn't be helping this team based on what's happening in Miami, but I mean, I think that's just an excuse for fans because obviously he would help this Lions team. I mean, he is a star player, and it's hard to diagnose exactly why things haven't gone well for him in Miami. But, you know, he was the best player on this team last year, and they certainly miss him.
What are Lions fans thinking right now? I mean, I know you get a lot of it on Twitter from these people, and this is a fan base that is, you know, not unfamiliar with bad teams, but what's kind of the mentality like now? Do they want, I'm sure they all want Caldwell gone. Do they want Stafford gone? I mean, what's kind of going on with Lions Nation?
I think the public enemy number one has been Joe Lombardi, because I think for most fans, there's this deep rooted sense of belief in Matthew Stafford that, you know, one day he can be the quarterback that he was in 2011. So most of the blame is going to Lombardi for not finding ways to utilize his immense, you know, potential. But beyond that, I think a lot of fans are really upset with the Ford family. It also came out last week, and my colleague John Neo had a really good column on this today. Bill Ford Jr., who was the son of the late William Clay Ford Sr., he said on a radio show last Friday that, you know, his mother, Martha Firestone Ford, is the one running the team, making all the decisions. So now people realize, and I mean, this has been the case all along since her husband died last March, or March 2014, I should say. But now that people have seen someone in the family say it so matter-of-factly, they realize that a 90-year-old woman is the one making the decisions. And after seeing her husband make poor decisions for five decades, pretty much, I think, you know, people are really fed up with ownership at this point more than anything else.
What you're trying to say is she has nothing when it comes against Virginia McCaskey, because we know that the NFC North has room for only one female, you know, in charge of a football team, and no one gets up with Virginia and loses that battle.
Well, I got to be honest. I'd like to see them throw down on American Gladiator. I think the ratings would go through the roof if those two stepped into the ring.
I wouldn't mess with Virginia. I've been told that she's got a pretty strict workout regimen that she goes about. So that's something that we. You know, we could see if they may. Hey, speaking of, last time the Bears played the Lions, we had Brandon Marshall challenging Lions fans to fights. So,
forgot all about that.
At least things for Chicago media is a little better. Josh, before I let you go, do you have a pick yet for this game, or do you have at least where you think you're leaning?
I haven't picked it yet, and it really is going to depend probably on whether Levy's playing, because I think if Levy isn't playing, and right now, I wouldn't expect him to play because, I mean, obviously he was bad enough or unhealthy enough to not play in the second half last week. And I think without him, there's going to be so many opportunities for Forte to get off on short passes or, you know, just runs over the middle that I think it'd be hard for the Lions to stop the Bears. But I also think it's going to be hard for the Bears to stop the Lions. So I think it'll be a close game. But really, I'm at a point where after watching these Lions for the last 5 weeks, it's going to be hard for me to pick them to win a game until I see that they can.
I know what that feeling's like covering a team like that, somewhat similar. You know what? Just Josh, just remind your fans on Twitter that it's almost Pistons season, and they can get lit for some Detroit Pistons basketball.
Well, I know you Chicago people won't understand this, but they're actually more excited about the Red Wings season right now. You know, obviously the Blackhawks have had the Wings number the last few years, but there's a new coach for the Red Wings and new optimism. So I think that's where they're, you know, letting their fandom slide at this time of the year.
All right. Well, so they have their options, but,
exactly.
All right. That is Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News. Josh, thanks again.
Yep. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right. And, Arthur, I mean, he kind of laid it out there. I mean, it's ugly in Detroit, but I want to get right into our matchup breakdown here, and I want to talk first about that Lions passing offense versus the Bears' passing defense, because I think I'm giving the Lions the edge. As Josh said, the names on the paper, they're still there, and just looking at Tate and Calvin Johnson, those could be the best pair of receivers the Bears have faced this season.
Yeah, I don't think I'd have any argument with that statement, and obviously we remember some of the struggles that Calvin Johnson has created for this Bears secondary. His last 100-yard game was last Thanksgiving in Detroit. Kyle Fuller was not up to the challenge there. So, you know, it is a wild card trying to predict how Stafford's going to be coming off his first professional benching. But, you know, just based off personnel and given some of the inexperience on the last line of defense for the Bears secondary, I wouldn't argue with giving them a slight edge just because Johnson's had their number for a while.
I'm going to skip the Lions rushing offense versus the Bears run defense because
that, I mean, spare us all.
They're terrible. The Lions are terrible in the run game. It'd be an embarrassment if the Bears somehow lost that matchup. And then they've been playing pretty well against the run. I will give one statistical nugget for you guys. The Bears have allowed only one run of 20 yards or more this season. So there you go. Okay, Bears passing offense versus Lions passing defense. This team does not have the outside Ziggy Ansah, does not have the pass rush that maybe the Chiefs or Raiders had. Josh said the safeties have been playing well for Detroit. We don't know who's been playing for receiver for the Bears. I know Cutler willed them back in the last quarter, and those guys looked better, but they got off to a terrible start in that game, the passing offense. What do you kind of see in this matchup?
You know, I think it's probably a coin flip. You said the pass rush hasn't been great. You're right. There's not a lot of kind of brand name guys that are getting after it, but it's been pretty steady, and it's obviously keyed by Ziggy Ansah. He is not someone you can overlook. He's going to give Charles Leno everything he can handle if we're to assume Charles Leno will get his third straight start. I would also tend to agree that DeAndre Levy, and whether he plays or not, is such a huge equation in this game because he means so much to stopping running backs and tight ends, and those are the two most consistent pass catchers for the Bears, obviously, in Martellus Bennett and Matt Forte. So I don't mean to cop out, but I think it's pretty much a coin flip, I guess, basically off what we've seen most recently. I guess we can give the Bears a slight edge here.
And then the last one, the Bears running game versus the Lions run defense. We mentioned Lions run defense has not been very good. They were best in the league in that category last year. Josh went through the Levy injury, missing the defensive tackles, of course. We talked earlier in the show, the Bears haven't been running the ball well, but the thing is, Arthur, you know they're going to go to it. They're going to try to run the ball. And Matt Forte is one of the best players on the field, period, which I think you kind of have to swing the pendulum in that direction.
Yeah, I would agree. It's looking right now like the starting defensive tackles will be Gabe Wright and Caroon Reed,
Who are those people?
Exactly.
Actually, Caroon Reed went to Princeton, right?
He did. And so they actually were really excited about him after the offseason. But
okay, that's cool.
You know,
that's cool.
There's just been too much on their plate. When you don't have Haloti Ngata, he's already missing time. Tyrone Walker was actually looking like a player after coming over from the Saints. He's done for the year. So right up the middle of that defense, except for in the safety core where Josh acknowledged Glover Quinn and Ihedigbo are not bad. Steven Tulloch hasn't been the same guy in the middle of that defense. So I think you definitely have to give the edge to the Bears and Matt Forte getting loose.
All right, Arthur, we're going to take a break from Bears-Lions because last week at Halas Hall, I had a nice chat with Bears defensive lineman Ego Ferguson. Funny guy, that Ego Ferguson. We talked about his weight loss. We talked about his modeling aspirations and some other fun things. So enjoy this interview with former LSU Tiger because we start the interview talking LSU on number 95, Ego Ferguson. I'm right now by Ego Ferguson. Could you tackle Leonard Fournette?
Ask him, can I tackle him? You feel me? We don't work that. The guy definitely give him a little bang for his money.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is he the best back you've seen at your alma mater, LSU?
He's probably the best player in college football right now, and definitely probably top two backs I've seen at LSU.
So I've seen you come in here. You guys all have your little SEC rivalries. LSU, how you feeling about your Tigers right now for this year?
Every year is championship or bust, you know what I mean? So this year I feel like it's championship.
There we go. All right, so you're good buddies with Will Sutton. You guys were drafted together. You came in the league together your second year. Here's my question. Will's always the first one out of the locker room when you guys run in the field. You know, do you notice that? he's certainly not the fastest guy. We both know that. What is it about Will that he's just the first one out there?
I mean, Will, what are you talking about for games?
Yeah.
Will, he has his little pregame stuff where he likes to get out there first, you know what I mean? And, you know, he does it every game. At first, I used to say something about it, but now it's just been constant every game.
Have you ever thought of just, like, coming out of nowhere and just beating him off the line, being the first one out there?
I don't think he'll let nobody beat him.
That's good. That's good. Man. All right, so we'll talk a little football. What do you like most about Vic's defense?
I know it's new to all of us, you know what I mean? This is my first time playing 3-4 defense. So just kind of understanding, you know, the different schemes and some acts, you know what I mean? The thing that he does a great job of is just breaking down where you can read stuff by yourself, you know what I mean? Understanding the formations you're in, where's the overhang at, and kind of defining your block before the play happens.
So I asked Kyle Long about this a few weeks ago. Is it true Vic Fangio was transported by Time Machine from the 1950s? Doesn't he feel like a coach from the 50s or something?
He definitely feel like he could have fit in the 50s.
Like he could have been like Lombardi's coordinator or something?
He definitely could fit in that era. He's definitely one of the most old school coaches I ever had. You know, very strict down to business, you know, not too much play from, and just like a professor, you know what I mean?
Yeah. You ever, when it was hot out, did you ever worry about him with all those sweatpants and sweatshirts?
Shit, I think when it's hot, when it's cold, he wear the same thing every single day.
How many pairs did you, I hope you got extra pairs of those.
I hope so, too.
So, how much weight did you end up, have you lost to from last year to this year?
I think like last year was like 310, 312, this year like 295.
Okay, so that's pretty good.
Yeah.
So you should get like one of these diet things to use as your sponsor. You know, you could lose weight like Eagle Ferguson did.
Man, they need to give me that. You know what I mean? Give me a reward for the sexiness of the year.
There you go.
I need to be in GQ magazine also, you know. What do you think, Jarvis? I need to be in GQ magazine.
Huh?
He thinks he could be in GQ Mag.
Of course.
Yeah.
The mindset is there, baby. The mindset is there. Mindset screams GQ.
All right, so we're going to get you a diet commercial. We're going to get you on the cover of GQ magazine. So then what was it, though, about the dieting and workouts? How did you get to where you need to be?
I mean, the biggest thing is just being disciplined, understanding the goal that you have at the end of the day. You know, it's a lot of days you have up and downs days when you're trying to train like the way you're trying to train and you want to cheat. But I had good friends around me, had a circle around me that kept me focused on the main goal, and we achieved it.
What is your cheating food? What's like something that you, if today is cheating day, you can go grab?
I mean, you know, you can't never go wrong with hot wings. You know, you can get hot wings from any place. If you mess up some hot wings, you got some bad food.
Yeah.
Either hot wings, or I'm gonna go ahead and go get me a porterhouse steak. You know what I mean? With some little garlic mashed potatoes on the side. You know, sprinkle a little crab meat on the side of that thing. Let's go. Ready to go?
There you go. All right, so go back to LSU here, down in Baton Rouge. What's the best food down there? What was your place?
Man. All right, I used to love Perrin's, you know what I mean? I used to love getting the crawfish. I love the catfish out there. I was in love with the oysters from, what's it called, Drago's.
Okay.
Like a charboiled oyster. I mean, in Louisiana, you had a lot to choose from.
Right, now, we don't have a lot of that in Chicago. At least we don't have, like, the original. We don't have the real, you know. But if you'd be able to find some good, you know, southern food out here.
Yeah, you know, Papado's been doing me justice, you know what I mean? I found a couple spots in Skokie for Jamaican food and stuff like that.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, but, you know, my favorite place so far in Chicago, besides Portillo's, I love Portillo's.
Oh, yeah. What's your go-to there, Portillo? You got the hot dog?
Yeah, gotta get a hot dog at Portillo's.
What about beef?
Big dog.
Oh, okay, big dog. You go big.
Yeah. My favorite spot in Chicago, gotta be Maestro's.
Yeah?
I try to go there. Anytime I get company or somebody I like to come out here, you know, we going to Maestro's. I love Maestro's.
Do they got to know you now there?
Yeah, they should know me by first name.
Yeah, there you go. Now, you know, when you go to Maestro's, they say, Ego, man, I don't even recognize you anymore. You're losing all the weight. You're going to have the GQ cover.
I'd have got that a couple of times about, you know, the weight loss and everything like that. But, you know, Maestro's is one of a kind.
Yeah. All right, so last question for you since Jeremiah just walked in. What have you learned most from this guy over 2 years?
I mean, honestly, he probably the best coach I've had since I've been in the league, to be perfectly honest with you. You know, you have coaches, but you know somebody that's been in the Pro Bowl for 5-plus years, that played in 3-4 defense, played in the 4-3 defense. Just the stuff he see, the mentality he bring out every day, it's something special, you know what I mean? And as a young guy, you learn to appreciate stuff like that for somebody been doing it for 10-plus years, 11-plus years, and he's still out there competing with us, you know what I mean, as far as running to the ball constantly. It's just a mindset, you know what I mean? And it's the difference between you have players that, you know, can do the play the game, but he's like a player that can teach and play the game. You know what I mean? So he always constantly helping us, you know, with our eyes, with our hands, you know what I mean? Just what we see. Even when you playing with him, you notice, like, if you out there with him, he'll tell you, well, you got work on this side, you know, because he sees stuff before we see it, you know what I mean? And he try to, like, explain us what is he looking at and stuff like that. And I ain't never have a player like that around.
Oh, that's so nice. He might take you to my show one of these days.
I'm trying to get him to take me to my show, cheap ass. I'm taking my show. What's up, right? How you doing, man? I'm just chilling, baby. Hey, we got D-Line done this weekend?
All right, so that does it for our interview with the...
He didn't call my name out the blue. What you talking about?
So that does it for our interview with future GQ cover model Eagle Ferguson.
Thank you very much, man.
It does tend to get a little rowdy in that Hallis Hall locker room, especially coming off a win. So, you know, Jeremiah Ratliff, Jarvis Jenkins messing with Ego a little bit. But I hope you guys enjoyed getting to know Ego Ferguson a little bit. And Arthur, I hope you don't mind that I like to just pretty much ask these guys what they like to eat, because we all know they like food, so it's an easy thing to talk about.
My mouth is watering. Mastro's butter cake, about as good as it gets. He talked about Portillo's too. That was like torture. As pleasant as Ego is, and as enjoyable as he is to listen to, that was kind of tough. It had my stomach growling.
Telling you, sponsorship opportunities here. We had Real Urban Barbecue last week with Jarvis Jenkins. You know, Ego talking a little Maestro's, a little Portillo's. Something to keep an eye on going forward. But thanks again to Ego for that one. Let's go right ahead into our player to watch, and then we'll make our Bears-Lions picks. I'm going to be honest with you guys right now. I haven't made my pick yet as I'm speaking. I don't know what I'm going to do. So we'll see. That's why I go last. So before we get to our picks, Arthur, your player to watch on Sunday. By the way, noon game on Fox, Bears-Lions at Ford Field.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Matt Forte. You know, one of the most kind of distinct memories I have of a season I really would not want to remember anything from in 2014 was just Matt Forte and how pissed he was in Detroit in that locker room after getting 5 carries in a game that the Bears were within one possession into the fourth quarter. I know it's a new regime. I know it's a new offense, but it just seems like that's the way the Bears can kind of best stick it to the Lions while they're down is featuring a back like he should be. And I just really think that this is going to be a Matt Forte game, the best of the season for him so far.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. I'm curious to see what Matt says about that this week. He's been pretty candid about, you know, how things went last season for him. Defensive side of the ball, I'm going to be watching Kyle Fuller. You know, Tracy Porter's looked really good. We haven't seen much of Kyle Fuller in the last couple weeks, really 3 weeks since he's going to, you know, made those gaffes in the first two games this season. Will he be on Calvin Johnson like he was last year? I don't know. Will he be on Golden Tate? You know, probably not if Golden Tate's out of the slot, but I have a feeling at some point in this game, Kyle Fuller is going to be involved, and I'd like to see if he can make a play. You know, because he's just been kind of quiet, which is okay if you're a cornerback, but I think this could be an opportunity for him to step up and, you know, maybe win some fans back with a good play and more importantly, help out the Bears defense. Let's go around the room. Let's make our picks. Let's wrap up, and because we got to go watch the Cubs. We will start with associate producer John Solly.
This feels like an ugly game to me. I think Bears 17, Lions 13. That just feels right to me on this one.
All right, our executive producer Dan Mott.
I'm going Bears 28, Lions 24.
Okay, guys, both guys keeping it close. I think Lions are 3-point favorites, which is just kind of that essentially it's an even, but the Lions get the home field advantage. Arthur, you know the Lions better than most. What do you got for this one?
Yeah, I don't understand that line. I know that you normally get 3 points if you're playing at home, but as disastrous as the Lions have been and as confident as the Bears are, I don't think it's that close. I'm going to say 27 Bears, 17 Lions, and they really are able to kick Detroit while it's down right now.
Wow, okay. Arthur really, you know, sending...
I'm also 2-3 on the season picking games and haven't picked a Bears win right yet, so let's keep that all in perspective.
That's okay. No one's keeping track except for everyone.
Oh, right.
So you're going to send the Lions to 0-6. I will as well. I think this is going to be a close, ugly game. I guess I'm... Wow, clean sweep. I think it's the first time on the show that we all picked the Bears to win. I'll go Bears 23, Lions 19. A lot of field goals in this one for both teams. Robbie Gould's been awesome this year, so I will give the Bears an edge. And wow, they could be 3-3 heading into the bye. That's going to do it, folks, for episode 7 of the Chicago Bears podcast. Excuse me. I do have Hub's pick for everyone. Do people want to know what Hub picked in this one? All right, Arthur, talk for a minute while I find Hub's pick. Tell us more about why you picked the Bears to beat the Lions.
Well, as I mentioned, I haven't seen enough from the Lions this year to have any confidence. I don't think they'll go in 16, but I'm not sure they're going to get to win before the bye. Our producer, Dan Mott, had just quieted the music, but I don't think we've had a chance yet to give a little plug to Chicago band Umphrey's McGee. If the hair on the back of your neck is standing up every week when you hear that intro and outro like mine, that is Umphrey's McGee music, and it is a thing of beauty, so go check it out.
All right, and we have breaking news. I have to change my pick because I picked the exact same score that Hub did. I was wondering why that was in my head. Hub picked the Bears 23, Lions 19. So I'll go a little more points. I'll go Bears 26, Lions 20, still picking a lot of field goals. And we'll recap it all next week and see what happens. Don't forget, for all the best Bears news and analysis, visit us at chicagofootball.com. Follow all of us on Twitter. Also like to remind you to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and maybe give us a rating, only if it's going to be a 5-star rating, though. I want to thank our sponsors, Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy Dealers. Fall is here, and you can count on the dependable and long-lasting Silverado to be your harvesting partner. Check out all the Chevy truck selections at ChevyDriveChicago.com today and drive what Dan Hampton drives. A big thanks to our guests on the show, Josh Katzenstein of the Detroit News and Bears defensive lineman Ego Ferguson, our executive producer Dan Mott, associate producer John Sally, and for my co-host Arthur Arkish and everyone here at ChicagoFootball.com. Have a great week. Enjoy the Cubs. Enjoy the Bears. And we'll talk to you next week.